Hello and welcome to the Zero Hanger TV Brownlow special. I am joined by AFL reporter Jack Jovanovski. Welcome, Jack.
Phoenix.
And we're just going to be breaking down our predictions for this year's Brownlow. So the prelims are done, and now we're getting into the exciting part of the Brownlow. So looking at who the best player was, obviously, throughout the home and away season. So compared to previous years, how predictable do you think this year's race is?
It's hard to say. I don't think this is going to be predictable one at all. It's going to be a pretty tight finish. Obviously, a lot of people think Dacos still, despite his injury. Obviously, Bontempelli's up there. We've got a few guys who are going to be sneaking into the top five or even closer. Obviously, we had a close count last year with Cripps and Neil and Miller, but this is, slated to be just as close.
Yeah. I think what I like about this year, though, too, is that there's no real controversy or asterisk next to the winner this year. Like, obviously, Cripps, I mean, arguably could have been reported and missed out for his Brownlow winning year, but this year it's a pretty clean sheet, really.
Yeah, exactly. And there are, I think, more conversations now in terms of should we actually scrap that rule or at least alter it to the point where maybe like a one-game suspension, you can still be eligible, things like that. Unless it's like a really egregious sort of incident, but obviously, as things stand, it's still, that rule's still in place. But like you said, this year it hasn't been much of a concern, which is good. We can sort of preview the main candidates without having to worry about, suspensions.
Yeah. Do you think it should be scrapped? Because it is the, I guess, the best and fairest.
It is. Yeah. No, that's right. And I don't think it should be scrapped. I think you could look at altering the regulation around it in terms of if it's like a one game or depending on what the actual instances or take it case by case, maybe. It's pretty tough. I think you've had to say one or another, just don't scrap it because it is the best and fairest.
I kind of like how it is now. I don't think you should win it if you've been suspended for a game. Suspensions are fine, but I mean, with the MRO and everything, it is kind of a dice roll anyway. So so we'll get into the top five predictions for each. So you've got a top five and I've got a top five. We'll start at number five of who we think will win the Brownlow. So in fifth place, I've got Butters, Zach Butters. So really strong. And as you said, it's a pretty tight race. Like you could have any number of people up here, but I think Butters is in that fifth place just because sort of a slowish start to the season, but they really came good in that sort of mid period towards the end. So how did you rate Butters' season this year?
Yeah, really built into the season. Yeah, I like this one. He's in my top five as well. He obviously, like you said, that really record-breaking streak in the middle of the season really kind of pushed his season up. Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys really built their seasons at Port during that stretch as well. Obviously, we see Connor Rosie and Dan Houston in the All-Australian teams. Those guys had really good form lines across that period of the year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they slowed down a little bit towards the end. Had some poor form towards the end of the season. Obviously, got knocked out. But Butters himself was really strong and actually kept that form going right up until the end of the home and away season.
Yeah, absolutely. And like pretty much anyone in these top fives could take it, essentially. Butters definitely had a handful of, or more of like three vote games where he just like won them off at the back of his own boot. Of course, the one that I remember is going to be the one against the D's in the rain at Adelaide Oval. He was just incredible on that. So your number five is my boy, Christian Petrarca.
Yeah, he's been pretty strong. I think his sort of candidacy in terms of a top five finisher is really built around Clayton Oliver's absence because we know Clayton Oliver, and we'll talk about it soon, he was sort of a fast starter this season before he had that lengthy layoff. And Petrarca was really able to sort of fill in that absence and, do a lot of damage both in the midfield and up forward for the Ds.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was quite inaccurate. Most of the year, that's always been the knock on him if you have to have a knock on him. But in terms of score involvements, I think he's rated number one in the league. And yeah, really, that's the thing with Brownlow. It's like, who's going to steal votes off you as well? Like, and when you have a strong midfield like the Ds do, obviously, Petrarca's going to benefit with Oliver not being in there. So
yeah, that's the thing. Yep. One way, either way, like whether it's Petrarca or Oliver contending for a Brownlow, the conversation's always going to be which one is going to steal the other's votes.
Yeah.
And obviously, the thing with the forward, missing shots at goal is obviously now it's a conversation of do you keep him there just because of how inaccurate he can be? But because he's such a threat around sort of any contest, you just have to keep him up forward every now and again. I think the accuracy should, you know, come a little bit more over time, you'd hope. But he's so dangerous that, yeah, he's such a dual threat.
Yeah, and as we know, that's not an issue that's solely on Petrarca's head. That's the entire D's team at the moment. Yeah, so yeah. In fourth place, I have Nick Dacos. So obviously he had one of the strongest starts to the year, pretty much the entire season up until that injury. But I think that might... like a lot to do with our MVP, it's very similar. Like he was leading pretty much all year and then got that injury and he just sort of fell off. So I think I've got him in fourth place. But yeah, how did you rate Dacos' season, obviously?
Oh, outstanding until his injury. I'm actually curious about this one, mate. Number four.
Yeah.
It feels like a bit of a drop.
It is. I think that...
are you trying to be controversial? Or?
No. I just don't think he's... He has the games that he played really well in. He's obviously got the three votes. I'm getting some hand signals from the rest of the Zorahaga team over there. He's obviously got a lot of three vote games, but I think the drop off and just how competitive it is this year, and given that he did lose out to that injury, I think he's going to be surprisingly. I think he's going to fall to fourth place. So I guess there are some controversial points in here, but we'll leave that till we get to it. But yeah, obviously Dacos probably across the landscape might be a lot of people's favorite. But I think, you know, Brownlow always throws up weird stuff. So I've got in number four and I'll probably be eating these words in a couple of days. So yeah. And so in fourth place for you, you've got Lachie Neale.
Yeah, yeah. Lachie Neale obviously is just going to get, or has been getting tagged just about every week. And that's really why he, you know, isn't really higher in this conversation. I think if obviously you got guys like Josh Dunkley, Hugh McCluggage, who plays a bit more forward, Zach Bailey, who plays a bit more forward as well. So I think he's such an obvious guy to tag if you're an opposing team that a lot of times he can't have the impact he, you know, usually would. And even though he does tend to sort of outplay those tags at times, they sort of do inhibit his ability to kind of get more three-vote games.
Yep.
So he only comes in at fourth for me, but he had a really strong season. And it was that early to middle part where he really had really strong form, and then it was kind of the latter part where he was getting more heavily tagged.
Yep, absolutely. So moving on to our third place. So this is where it starts to get controversial. So I'm pretty biased. So I've got Petrarca in number three. I think he's had probably about as good of a year as you can have for a player that just can't kick straight. So, you know, D's win a lot of games this year. I've got him in third place. I don't think it's too controversial. I do have him above Dacos just because he played more games. But yeah, so, and in third place, you've got Butters.
Yeah, I've got Butters. We talked about him. Really strong season, especially building into the back end even once that streak came to an end. I think he was far and away their best player this season. He's just really always so electric around the contest, really clean. You mentioned that game in the wet against the D's. He still finds a way to be really clean and crafty with the ball in hand. He's always finding a chest with his kicks.
Yep.
He makes every disposal count. So he was, you know, huge.
Yep. All right, and moving over to second place. So I've got Neale and you had Dacos. So for me, Neale, I agree with everything you said, obviously. You know, I had him fourth. I just think he's still, it's so weird to say because he's a Brownlow winner and, you know, he's been so consistent. But I feel like he is still just weirdly underrated. You send a tag to him every week, but I think he came home really strong. We'll talk about that later. And just nobody really talks about Brisbane that much, but they've had a very, very successful year. Neale's going to have a lot of three-vote games and a lot of games where he'll poll one or two votes as well. But yeah, so I've got him in second place and you had Dacos in second place.
Yeah, just so Neale, I think you're right. Like him and the Lions have flown under the radar for most of this season. And so obviously the Lions, most expect them to be a good side week in, week out. So by extension, he then also flies under the radar. But yeah, obviously, you know, not playing in Victoria, there's a little bit less sort of focus on them as a whole.
Yep.
But yeah, played really well again, obviously. For me, Dacos, yeah, I think he, you know, comes in second. Obviously, the injury and his absence is going to end up hurting him ultimately. But it was that, yeah, first portion and half of the season where he really just kind of made it obvious he was going to be challenging, if not, you know, the outright favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was for, you know, a really long time there. And It's a shame because, you know, I think we'll look back on this year's Brownlow thinking this should have been his.
I think, if he doesn't get that injury, like, there'd be no question about who number one is. But speaking of that, in first place, we've got the same person, pretty uncontroventional, I think, and it's Marcus Bontempelli. So winner of our Zero Hanger MVP. So thoughts?
Well, it's like you said, I think if Dacos doesn't get hurt, this is probably not really much of a conversation. And mm-hmm. that's sort of maybe, I guess, the silver lining of the injury, if there ever was to be one, is that it means we have a much closer count and we actually don't really know who's going to win. Obviously, Bont is our MVP, but I think that was pretty obvious that was going to happen just because of the way we did the voting, with each person giving 5 votes. He had to get votes there in the weeks Dacos wasn't around, and he really sort of did capitalize.
Yeah.
I think, though, where the window is still open for Dacos to take it is the fact that Bontempelli probably wasn't quite as prolific in those final 3 rounds as we kind of thought he might be. He got tagged a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The Dogs had lost, they lost 2 of their last 3 games, which hurts his chances, because ultimately it's hard to get 3 vote games if you're not winning as a team, especially when one of those losses comes against the Eagles at home.
Yeah.
So he had a big game against the Cats in Geelong in the final round to kind of put them back in finals contention. I think that's one where he could poll all 3 votes, but in those losses before, he could fall down.
Yeah. I think what's strong for Bond, obviously, is like in pretty much every one of their wins, he's polling. Again, the only person, we'll get into this a bit later, but the only person really going to be taking votes off Bont in his wins is probably Libber. And even then, it's probably not that many. So, I think it's pretty... Bont should be taking home, Charlie. So your outside chance is Errol Goulden.
Yeah, and he, for me, only just missed out on top 5 finish, I think. He was one who we'll talk about again as well in terms of a fast finisher, but the Swans kind of came from the clouds to kind of go back to the finals, and he was a massive reason why.
Yeah.
So on the wing, in terms of meters gained, inside 50s, he ranked first in the entire league in inside 50s per game.
Yeah.
Total inside 50s, he ranked second in meters gained per game, which is massive for a wingman. That booming left foot of his, he's always creating opportunities. He's lethal by foot in terms of just, you know, passing as well.
Yeah, his kicks are amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
And he averaged 26.8 disposals per game this season. So I thought he was massive, and he's a smoky, definitely for a top 5.
Yeah. And so for me, it was Jack Sinclair, because, you know, Saints won enough games this year. Obviously, they played finals, which is surprising to everybody. But Sinclair was just one of those guys that he was pretty consistent throughout the year. I think he was in the top 10 of our MVP for a lot of the year. Averaged 28 disposals. Oh, sorry, 28.9 kicks, 19 kicks, handballs, 9 meters gained, 500. I think he's just a chance for the top 5 because no one else is really going to take votes off him either as well. Jack Sinclair, wouldn't be too surprised to see him in the top 5 there. So going back to our Zero Hanger MVP top 10. So obviously we had Bont in first place, Petrarca came second, Neil's third, and then Goulden in fourth place. So I think that was surprising when we talked about it with Mitch, and then Nick Dacos top 5 in fifth place, so 100 with 197 votes. So in terms of, you know, comparing the Zero Hanger MVP to the Brownlow, is it, like, obviously the Brownlow has like a bit of a bias towards midfielders and like that kind of thing. Could you see like a different position player having more effect on the MVP compared to a Brownlow? Because the Brownlow, I think we all understand, is a midfielders award.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even though it's pretty much only midfielders bar Toby Green in our top 10, I do remember giving out plenty of votes to guys like Sam Taylor, mm-hmm. Stephen May, so like key defenders who just have enormous impacts on games, not in the way of disposals, but in terms of just overall influence.
Yep.
So I think those guys were players that we recognized in the MVP award more so than what we'll see on Brownlow night. Obviously, Toby Green as well, a forward, guys who can goals. I know I think we all gave Jesse Hogan 5 votes against Port. Or sorry, we gave him 4 votes, I think most of us, after Cogs. So he was really influential. So we're trying to recognise, like, you know, these key position players, other guys in the game. I know Kieran Briggs, a ruckman, got quite a few votes throughout the season. He had a massive year. So we definitely do, I reckon, look towards, you know, other positions as opposed, like, in addition to just midfielders.
Yeah. So I think Zerahanga, we did do a video earlier in the month, I think, that sort of went over our MVP top 10 and why those people voted. But yeah, it was pretty interesting to see. I think throughout the year, a lot of key forwards that were kicking a lot of goals were probably making it over some midfielders. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's always the midfielders that sort of have the most effect on the game and the most impact. So
Texan Charlie Kerno.
Jeremy Cameron as well was in there maybe midway through the year or maybe towards the start of the year. But it was pretty interesting to see that, how that tracked over the year. So what we're going to do now is go over each team and probably name who's going to poll the highest and maybe who's going to come second. So we'll start down the list alphabetically. So Adelaide, Jordan Dawson, most likely going to poll the most votes for Adelaide.
100%. We saw him move a defender or someone who kind of played in the wing every now and again to kind of really inside midfield. And he had a really enormous impact. He's so versatile. And the impact he has on games is undeniable. Obviously, you got guys like Rory Laird in there as well. But in terms of their best polar, I think it's got to be Dawson. I think Tex might be the next best just because of some of those hauls he had throughout the season.
Yeah. For Brisbane, I think it's pretty clear-cut Neil. Yep. Maybe McCluggage in second. Who would you have for second?
Probably McCluggage, maybe Dunkley, but his impact is more felt in terms of, you know, your defensive pressure, kind of hard hitting in and under. So I'm not sure he's going to be recognised quite as much as he might, you know, or should be.
Yep.
Cluggage is a decent shout.
Yep. For the Blues, we have Cripps, obviously, first, although we don't have him in the top 5 or anything. Like, I think he was obviously carrying an injury throughout most of this year, but still had a very effective year coming off his Brownlow year. How did you rate Cripps this season?
It was good. I think obviously we've seen better seasons out of him. Obviously he won the Brownlow. So I think there's a chance Charlie Kerno actually outpolls him.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah.
But, you know, but just because, like you said, the nature of it being a midfielder's award, it might be. But I think his season was okay. Obviously, he shoulders quite the load. There's a massive burden on him just as the captain of Carlton and bringing success, which he has, you know, played a massive part in doing this season.
Yep. Moving on to Collingwood. So obviously Nick Dacos, probably the only person that's going to steal votes of him might be De Goey. Anyone else there, do you think?
I think De Goey is the guy who jumps out there.
Yep.
They've got really great role players all across the field, Collingwood. But in terms of guys who are going to poll, I think the only one that comes close is De Goey.
Yeah, absolutely. For Essendon, Zach Merritt, most likely. Not too many that are going to be stealing votes off Merritt.
Don't think so. There might be a couple of games where Darcy Parrish might get a few ahead of him. There are a few big games in terms of accumulating possessions, but Zach Merritt should probably take this one.
Yep. For Freo, one guy that we haven't talked about, but he did make the top 10 of our MVP, is Caleb Sarong for Freo.
Yeah, all Australian this year as well. He had a really massive season, especially considering how disappointing the Dockers were this year.
Yep.
Massive expectations on them this season, and they didn't deliver. But one guy who can sort of look back on this year and be proud of his efforts all season long really were Sarong. Obviously, Andy Brayshaw's another guy in that midfield who can be pretty prolific at times, but I think Sarong's impact was far and away the best at the Dockers.
Yeah.
And that was reflected in kind of, like, his recognition as an All-Australian in our top 10.
Yep, absolutely. And for the Giants, we have Toby Green. Most likely going to poll the most votes. Won a lot of games off his own boot. But I think in second place or stealing votes of him is either going to be Canelio or Tom Green.
Yep, and Josh Kelly can be in that conversation as well. There are a few guys from the Giants. Even Kieran Briggs might still want to here and there, but they've obviously had a really, really great season at Kingsley.
Yep.
And so there are a few guys who were consistently high performers who could steal votes off him. That's an interesting one. I think the Giants is a bit more open in terms of who could poll the most.
Yep.
But you're probably looking at Cogs or Green as your top two.
Yeah, and I think Tom Green potentially, like, looking at his end of the year and coming into finals and how he's going in finals, I think he's he might be a Brownlow winner next year, you know?
Definitely in the foreseeable future, he will be a perennial candidate. And yeah. yet, this final series especially, he's, you know, he's making his case as one of the best, if not the best, finals performers so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So for Geelong, we have Jeremy Cameron, as we said before. Maybe Tom Stewart.
Maybe Tom Stewart. Yep. I think that's the one who maybe challenges him. In terms of the midfield, though, no one really jumps out. Danger didn't have a massive year. So I think it's, you know, those two bookends of either field that will challenge for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the Suns, we have Noah Anderson, a pretty strong candidate. Yeah, really strong year, especially for him. And I think he was due for a really good year.
Had a good start and built into it. I think he kind of faded as the Suns did later on. But he started quite well. And I think, yeah, he will probably poll up there.
Yeah, took out their best and fairest as well.
So. Yeah, yeah. I think Matty Rowell may challenge him, but I can't really think of anyone who's going to pull more votes in him for the Suns.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Hawthorn, obviously a really rough year for them, but Jai Newcombe, I think, has got a lot of attention just across the competition because he's just I love watching him.
Yeah, and rightly so. He's been really great. He's really good in and under contest. He's got a booming kick and he's accurate when he uses it. So he uses it really well and he's super physical. I think other than him, James Sisley might be the other one who can steal some votes off him. But yeah, I'd be surprised if it wasn't Newcombe.
Yeah. And for Melbourne, obviously Petrarca will be the leading vote getter, but probably the only person stealing votes off him is Jack Viney, who's sort of gone under the radar, but yeah, in light of, you know, Clary not playing the whole year, Jack Viney's been pretty strong.
He's definitely someone you can classify as, you know, underrated in the eyes of just the wider, you know, footy community. I think the other one there is Gorn,
yeah.
who will poll quite a few. Clary maybe one or two games when he came back, he could poll a few, but yeah, definitely Petrarca.
Yep. And for North Melbourne, obviously not going to poll a lot of votes, but LDU most likely to lead the votes.
I think so. Our only other guy I can think of again in terms of key position forwards is Nick Larky. He had quite yep. a few bags throughout the year, which is obviously, you know, pretty rare considering the Roosters' sort of lowly status mm-hmm. across the year. So he was really big for them. But yeah, LDU probably should poll more.
Yeah. Oh, and Sheasel, of course, as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Rising star, he won their BNF. Yeah. So there's every chance he actually does top both those guys.
Yeah. And for Port, obviously there's Butters and Rosie.
Yeah, yeah, pretty self-explanatory. We talked about them earlier. There are a few guys there. Obviously Dan Houston as well could maybe challenge, but would be surprised if it wasn't one of those two.
Yep. And then for Richmond, Tim Taranto had a really strong patch in the middle of the year. I'd be surprised if it was anybody but him polling the most votes for Richmond.
He was super strong in the early to mid portions of yeah. the year. He maybe, you could make the argument he sort of faded out towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I think most people would say that to even miss out on an All-Australian nomination to the squad was probably a snub.
Yeah.
So he was really strong and his recruitment has proved to be a success for Richmond so far.
Yeah. Anyone stealing votes off Taranto? Bolton maybe?
Shane
Dusty.
Bolton.
Dusty had a pretty underrated season though as well.
Yeah. So Dusty was Richmond's only All-Australian squad member. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to be one you look at. Shane Bolton as well in terms of impact. Those three are probably your main, you know, vote getters for the Tigers.
Yep. And for the Saints, we have Sinclair. Who we talked about earlier, but who's second to Sinclair, do you think?
Potentially, your Brad Crouch or your Jack Steele. There are games where I think you had other guys, maybe like Mason Wood or Bradley Hill, stealing votes here and there.
Wood was pretty strong for a lot. I think he was top five MVP for the early period of
early period of season, he was really strong. I know he sort of carried an injury towards the second half of the year.
Yep.
That kind of slowed him down a little bit.
Yep.
But he had a really strong season. I mean, and he's had quite the, you know, career resurgence at Moorabbin,
yeah.
but it will probably be Sinclair.
Yeah, and of course, Wilkie had a really strong year, but defenders don't really get any votes. So.
And he's one of those defenders who he's just consistently not really noted just because you just rely on him every single time to get the job done, which
yeah.
he does, the accountant. So, but no, he's not going to really poll, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. So coming around to Sydney, so Gordon, obviously the front runner. Who's taking votes off Gordon?
Maybe Luke Parker, maybe Chad Warner yep. here and there. Yeah, I would say Chad Warner is probably his biggest threat.
Yep.
But I think Goulden is is probably won't have too much trouble getting the most votes there for the Swans.
Yeah, a bit of daylight between Gordon and the rest. So West Coast, obviously, who knows? They did get a couple of wins, but Tim Kelly had a pretty strong year for them, given what they were going through.
Yeah, Tim Kelly, I don't think was really far off All-Australian contention. He was easily their best player throughout a pretty bad year. Oscar Allen had some pretty good games for the Eagles as well, but I think it'd be Kelly pretty easily.
Yep. And for last but not least, obviously the Doggies, we have Bont in first, and probably, as we said, the only person taking votes off him is Libba.
Yeah, I think the other contender there is Adam Treloar. A couple of games here and there, he played quite well for the Dogs, but you're right, I think it'd be Bont and then Libba. Still think there's a bit of daylight between Bont and Libba, though.
Yeah. Libba just continues to be one of the most unrecognised,
unheralded, best performers. Underappreciated, definitely. Mm. And he definitely will steal some votes off Bont.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the biggest surprises we see. If Dacos does manage to still get over the line, it'll be because I think Libba took more votes off Bont than people maybe thought leading into it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. And so to finish off, we'll talk about so we're making reference to a lot of like the different periods of the year. Obviously, 24 game season this year. So it was one game longer than most seasons. So we have fast starters and strong finishers. So who started the year strong?
So obviously, like we talked about, Dacos had a blistering start to the year and sort of established his candidacy really early on. Same with Clayton Oliver before his injury. Like we talked about, Noah Anderson when his Suns were sort of, flirting with the potential of playing finals. But obviously those sorts of guys, Anderson faded, Oliver got injured, obviously Dacos as well, but those are your fast starters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting, like looking at our MVP around round eight, Oliver was, in third place and Anderson was sitting eighth place. He was in that top 10 at the start of the year. But coming towards the end of the year, obviously, one of the most exciting things about the Brownlow is, the anticipation as it becomes towards the end of the year. And then looking at who had the strongest finish to the year. And again, Bont had that sort of three-game drop-off towards the end of the year, but who else finished really strong that could steal it at the end?
Yeah, Bont, probably not as prolific in those final three games, but in the lead-in to those three games, before Dacos got injured, he had some really lights-out performances.
Yep.
So he was the one who kind of started strong and sort of just kept building and then sort of ramped it back up again in the latter half. Obviously, talked about Butters, just maintained that good form even once that streak ended. Mm-hmm. He was just really prolific for the power. Paddy Cripps, obviously sort of like the Errol Goulden Swans in terms of as their form built towards the end of the season, so did Carlton's obviously, and Paddy Cripps was a massive reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Goulden, like we talked about, and then Neil as well, needing to be tagged heavily each week just to kind of stem that influence that he was putting out week in, week out.
Yeah. And then with the Giants too, as they hit their form in the end of the year, both the Greens obviously had strong finishes to the year. So yeah, it could be an exciting one this year. So Bont to take it out. Sinclair as an outside chance. Gordon, what do you think is going to be, or what are your predictions in terms of how the Knights going to play out?
I think it'll be pretty clear early on in terms of the count that Dacos will probably establish a considerable sort of early buffer.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, those guys we talked about in terms of fast starters could see guys like Sinclair and Anderson up there early.
Mm.
I think Bontepelli will really start to kind of make his move towards like the middle portion onwards. I think that if you're talking about the four quarters of the season, I think the sort of that third quarter is where he really sort of made a push.
Mm.
He was pretty substantial throughout the season, but he really pushed in that third quarter. It's really a matter of how that final quarter of the season plays out in terms of the count and whether he was able to kind of maximize that time in which Dacos was out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the one that's, we can't say I really have no idea how that last quarter is going to play out. We kind of know how it's going to roughly take shape in terms of, form lines and all that, but that last quarter is going to be most telling.
Yeah, so it's basically Dacos will hit the lead and then whether or not he can hold on to that come the end of the night. So that will wrap it up for us, I think. Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Phoenix.
And don't forget, you can catch all the latest AFL news at zerohanger.com.